All right, we're here with our SPX special of the Big Planet Comics podcast. What's going on, you guys?
2012.
SP Explosion.
Yeah, okay, so we just want to quickly go through that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.
Yep.
On the internet, and you can check us out on Facebook.
Yeah. True.
Also on the internet. You can Twitter us.
And Tumble us.
At Big Planet Comics. And yeah, you can Tumble us at bigplanetcomics.tumblr.com. Oh, by the way, my name's Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
Yep. So, yeah, we're going to talk about SPX a little bit, but we've got a special guest on the line. Are you there?
Drum roll.
Here I am.
All right.
Hey, it's Mike Dawson. How's it going, Mike?
It's going pretty good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We are fans of your show, and we understand that you listen to our show, at least when we review your books. So, yeah, I don't know. We thought you'd be a good guy to have on. You've got the podcast experience.
That's true. And for a little bit longer. A little bit.
And you've been at SPX for how many years have you been going there?
The end of the 90s are a little fuzzy for me. I can't quite remember exactly what years.
A lot of raves.
I was totally raving at the end of the 90s. So I either went down, the first time I had a table would have been 1999.
Wow.
So yeah.
The oldest of old school.
Going back that far. Obviously I missed the year 2001, and there was, I think, maybe one other that I missed. I can't remember though.
Oh yeah, 2001 was like right after September 11th, and they didn't have the show or moved the show to
hurricane season. I believe.
Yeah, and they moved the show to Baltimore or something like that year. I think
it got hurricaned out.
No, crazy. It was 9/11.
They wouldn't let people fly for some reason to awesome small press expo.
Yeah,
they canceled it altogether. That led to a impromptu show in New York City.
Oh, that's right,
SP Exiles, which actually then laid down the seeds that grew into the Mocha Festival.
Yeah. See, this is the institutional knowledge we wanted you to
see. I don't even know that.
Bestow on us.
I wasn't even here then.
Yeah, Kevin works on the show and he doesn't know that.
I do work on the show, so maybe you guys should interview me as well.
Nah.
Yeah, I met you guys at the show, right?
You did.
I was running around trying to get you an Ignatz balloon, and it never happened.
It's all right. It clearly didn't make any difference to me winning or not. We'll never know.
I only saw you from afar. I had a plan at SPX, and I was going to see certain people. And it all fell apart. I just kind of ran around like, hey, there's that guy.
Well, I feel like,
scramble.
Always at those shows, like, I feel like there's a million people you want to talk to and see. But this one in particular, I felt like, you know, I saw and talked to maybe like 20% of the people I would have liked to have spent time talking to.
There was just a high percentage of really, really good stuff.
Yeah.
Too much quality. That's my complaint about SPX.
Yeah, right.
Do you remember what you had your first year you were at the show?
What did I have with me?
Yeah, like what were you? You were doing mini comics back then.
What were your wares?
Yes, I had mini comics. I had been drawing a daily comic strip in the college newspaper, so I had some collections of that, just printed up as mini comics, and then the start of another character drama type series that I sort of started and then stopped. It was all mini comics. I had half a table. I went down with a friend, and it was actually. I don't know, a ton of fun, you know.
It's always fun. It doesn't matter.
Say how fondly I think back on those
and
days.
You made thousands of dollars your first
show? No, it was definitely one of those things where you made, I'm sure I made something like $13 or something like that.
Pay for your meal.
Well, SPX is definitely, it's about the show, but I feel like it's also about the just like hanging out after the show and being sequestered into a weird hotel with a bunch of awesome people.
Yeah, true.
Did you guys, were you guys around for all those parties and stuff?
Oh, all of them.
From time to time.
Yeah, I started going to the show, I think, around 2004. And then by 2005, I was already working at the show. but I've definitely been part of quite a few parties over there.
Yeah. Yep. I definitely ended up in weird rooms with really weird people, but that I later found out were people I knew. Like, I was like, oh, that was that guy. Like,
yeah, I remember maybe Frank Miller fishing for beers out of a bathtub in the Dark Horse sponsored party.
What?
Hotel room. Yeah.
Do you have a fishing pole?
Yeah, almost. There was weird stuff.
Yeah, I remember one time it was just kind of random. I was just sitting in a room talking to this guy, and after I left, I was like, hey, who was that guy? I was like, Larry Martyr. Oh, what?
Yeah.
Well, that first SPX I went to in the late 90s, I think it was at the Sequential Tart hotel room. They had like a hotel, you know, party that even the nobodies could get into. But like, I recall being in a room with Neil Gaiman and Evan Dorkin.
Wow.
You know, and at the time it was just It was amazing.
Yeah. Because
they have like nowhere else they could go.
That's like the hotel with the rest of us. Yeah. That's awesome.
So how was this year for you? Did you
wait? Oh. We're missing some important steps.
All right, yeah. Jared has this all planned out. I'm going by the seat of my pants here. I have no idea what's going on.
I want to hear the evolution of Mike Dawson at SPX, because like you went from mini comics from your earlier stuff to more mini comics, and then you morphed into having graphic novels. So how was that a change for you?
It was sort of a change. It was an amusing thing. I'm gonna try to tell the story. And I think it was meant in a good way.
Uh-oh.
But so I've been going to SPX for a long time, and I was taking mini comics first couple of years, and then somewhere around 2002, 2003, I was self-publishing like floppies, a series called Gabagool, which I was writing with a friend. So that was like a humor series, but you know they're getting printed up sort of like you know real comic books,
real comic
yeah.
books,
floppies,
yeah.
And then I stopped doing that, and then for a few years I wasn't bringing a lot down with me. I was just going because I was working on a graphic novel called Freddy and Me, which was published by a big publisher, because that was during that moment where all the big publishers are snatching up cartoonists, like you know, yeah. like in the book publishing world.
Right.
So then I went down with that, like I think in yeah, I guess in 2008, and then after that, the next year I went down back with mini comics again. Because I was working on a new book, Troop 142, and I was releasing it as mini comics because I was sort of trying to get back to my roots. And it was said to me, Heidi McDonald came around, and she said, "Like, oh, your career is like it matches the path of comics over the last decade. You know, you went
the
from
ebb and
comics,
flow of comics publishing.
You went from mini comics to the big publisher to now." And then she sort of pointed at my mini comics.
Wow.
Yes.
That is very nice of her.
But then Troop 142 got made in a graphic novel, and then you were able to get nominated for an Ignatz twice for the same book.
That is nice. True. Actually,
well done.
Technically, I was nominated for 5 Ignatzes for Troop 142.
Wow.
Wow.
So did you get nominated the year that you were a judge?
No, I did not. No. I was nominated.
Could have pulled a Frank Cho.
2010 in 4 different categories, and I won the Outstanding Online Comic category. Then nice. I was a judge last year, not nominated, didn't do a Frank Cho.
Wow.
I remember I was never a big online comics guy, but I remember seeing that Troop 142 was nominated for an Ignatz and then reading the entire thing on my phone outside of the show before it started in 2010.
Oh, wow. did we meet that year?
We did.
Yeah,
I told you that it looked great.
I remember that. Yeah.
I'm surprised you remember that. Yeah, yeah. It was, I was like, it looks great on my phone. And you were like, I did that.
Well, I guess I was excited because it was not intentional. Like, I had not considered phones. I'm sort of a little bit behind in terms of, you know, these new platforms.
The kids with their wacky comics reading.
I try to keep my head in the sand about that stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, right.
But well, for me, it was
magical.
Yeah.
So, I know you were an Ignatz judge. How was that? I always wonder about the secret life of an Ignatz judge.
Well, first, I mean, assuming you're listening to this, I know you love Big Planet Comics, but if you don't know what Small Press Expo is, abbreviated SPX, it's the best comic show in the world. It's held in usually Bethesda or North Bethesda. And the Ignatz Awards are a festival prize that is nominated by a jury. Mm-hmm. And there are 10 categories roughly each year. And then everyone at the show can vote on it during the first day, and then the awards are given out that night. And so Mike was one of the judges last year.
That is probably a good thing for people to know.
Yeah.
Background.
So the way it works is there's 5 judges. They don't know who the other ones are. It's all very secret.
Oh, really?
So
wow.
You're one of 5, but you have no idea who the other 4 judges are. So your only contact is through the people with Eden Miller. You probably know her.
Yeah.
Miller, I work with her. All those books get sent to our store here, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because you're saying stuff is at the store. But that's your only interaction with anybody. Aside from that, you have to be absolutely secret about being a judge.
Ah, nice.
And then you receive boxes in the mail over the course of the summer. My advice, if anyone ever wants to submit their books to be for Ignatz consideration, is to get it in early. Because I know my experience, and I've talked to other people, is that those first few boxes that come, you're like, I'm going to be very, very serious about this. I'm going to read every single book in this box. I'm going to organize them into piles, you know, very thoughtful. And then by the end, especially the last, like, you know, month before SPX, like, like you get three boxes at once because like everything's coming in and they can
just, right.
Yeah. You know, and I still took it very seriously. I don't want to misrepresent myself.
But it gets
there was a little less sort of the maybe piles, you know, a little bit less of that. It was either, you know, yes, no, gonna read this or not kind of thing. So yeah get it in early. Get it in early.
That's kinda how it happens with us too when we have so many things to read every week. The stuff we read near the end always ends up getting the worst reviews. Like, or, we get tired of it.
Or they're like amazing books and we just flip through them. Like like the Tezuka, we got a new Tezuka book in this week and I was just like, I like flip through it. I'm like, yeah, sure, this is good. Fine.
Yep. So
I hope they'll use that on the blurb of the next
That'll
book.
Be on the back of the book.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Pretty good. It came in late in the week.
So Mike, like how do you actually rate the Ignatz nominees when you like something? Like how's that process work?
So you get to pick three nominees per category. But the way it works is that essentially your number one pick will be the nominee, unless one of the other secret judges also picked the same pick, which means that then they go down to a number two. So the number one gets in there, but then to fill up all the spots, they start bringing out, you know, the number twos start getting in.
So would the number twos from both of the people who voted for the same thing go in, or just one of them?
Actually, I don't know. I guess I remember there was actually some tiebreaker stuff. Like after we all sent in our stuff, we still didn't know who the other judges were, but we were sent you have to break a tie. So out of these two or three books, which one would you nominate out of them? So yeah, there's some sort of calculus or formula that goes into it. But so the number one is the one you're guaranteed to get in. Then your two and three are sort of.
Wow, that's some pressure.
The three is pretty unlikely to get in.
And then after that, you nominate the next year's Ignatz judges, don't you?
Yes, you get to propose two other cartoonists, and they'll select one of the two, but you won't know which of the two they picked.
Wow.
I thought it was an interesting thing about that, I thought, this year. Am I talking too much or is it okay?
No, this is fine. Yeah, we're here all the time. You're only here this week, so go for it.
Well, the year I was nominated in 2010... all the judges were men. It was an all-male jury. It was the sausage party year. There was, justifiably, some complaint online about the fact that it was not very diverse.
Did you point out it was a secret sausage party because nobody knew at the time?
It's absolutely true that it was secret. It's a secret sausage party, but it just turned out it was all men. The following year, when I was a judge, it just happened to be a mix, but all the people who were judges that year had already been picked by the sausage party. But then when it came time for last year's judges, my year, I decided, you know what, I think it would be a good thing to bring some diversity. So I'm gonna really think about women cartoonists, especially people who I think may not get picked. If I didn't like think hard about it, I didn't want to I put a lot of thought into it. And I thought it was very interesting that every judge this year was a woman.
Yeah, nice. That's true.
Because every judge last year clearly had the same thought.
Everybody felt bad about it.
Edie Fake is, but he's a gay male, so that's still quite.
In spirit, it counts.
I think he is. Yeah, actually, I'm not totally sure. Actually,
we can cut that part out if we need to. Yeah. Well, I think that's been sort of
the trend,
shaky ground recently. There's been a lot of complaints about sort of women in comics being ill represented at shows and stuff. I feel like SPX the last couple of years has done pretty good.
Yeah.
We've been attacked a little bit, but I know some other shows have really had some problems with that. Yeah.
Oh.
I won't name any names since I actually work on SPX, but yeah, I know that's been a big problem on the internets.
Well, I mean the sausage party thing was the most I remember. I think this year I saw a little bit around the amount of special guests, but. I think overall track record is quite good for SPX.
Yeah, it's very diverse.
Yeah, we do.
Says this group of men.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
So how was your show this year? I saw you were there with Secret Acres, and you had Troop 142, and So how was it for you this year?
So Troop 142 had debuted last year at SPX. Mm-hmm. So this is sort of the end of my my world tour of going to conventions. Which wasn't really a world tour, but I went to as many conventions as I could. So I actually did a couple of extra ones that I normally wouldn't do. But it was nice to sort of bring it to a close at SPX again, you know, especially with the Ignatz nomination. That was really nice. So yeah, it was good. It was a really, really busy show. I sold out of all the books that we had.
Nice.
So they did say that they maybe didn't bring quite enough books with them.
Well, but clearly, you know, not.
So they only brought four books, but I sold out, of all of them.
Nearly instantly.
Well, that's always good to not have to lug all those books back with you.
But I mean, Secret Acres said they had their best show ever. Like, they
That's great.
Yeah, I was walking around seeing how people were doing. It seems like everybody this year was saying, even by Saturday, like the end of Saturday, that they were having their best show ever. So I was excited about that. Okay. Especially since we increased the room size by 50%. I was worried the money would run a little thin on the floor, but I don't know. People seem to like to spend money at SPX.
Yeah, and it was so nice to be able to walk around and not like bump into like 30 people, you know, on your way down the aisle.
That's true. You could stand and talk to people without causing riots.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was really well sort of laid out. I thought the flow was good, although I was happy to have a table quite near the exit for the easy bathroom right. access. Well, I was at New York Comic Con once, and I had a table over in the Artist Alley, and it was like it was about the furthest point from the bathrooms, and moving through that show was just impossible with all the people in their Dr. Octopus outfits and completely crowded in. Like, I don't know, I hate that show. I hate it so much.
Are you going to go this year? Or are you done with it?
No, I hate it. I really hate it. It probably would be good to go for, like, selling books, because I'm sure there are people there who would be interested in reading my books.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know, like, I get mad. Like, I just get mad when I see, like, press releases, like, you know, new panel announcement, the cast of Arrested Development.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Comics.
I think it definitely fancies itself as like the East Coast San Diego Comic Con or something.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure it succeeds in that way. It's just that
it doesn't make any sense. Yeah,
it's awful.
I don't know, I just love SPX so much because it's just not about that. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Have, you know, there isn't the video games and the movies and the TV and stuff. It's just about comics. You know, and that's what I mean.
Yeah, it just focuses on the creation of comics.
Yeah.
Well, we don't let anybody. We wouldn't let, like, you know, movie studios and things in. Like, we don't even let, I don't know, like Dark Horse in.
That's true.
I mean, I don't mean to be like speak badly of New York Comic. I just like it's so crowded. Like, I was there for a panel 2 years ago, and like I got there a little early, and I just so overwhelmed by the crowds. I think just the crowds might just be tough for me. But like, I actually spent like the hour before my panel hiding under a staircase, like the hallways, like reading. So it's just so intense. It's just like, you know, cause it's super crowded and crammed and, you know,
just trying to find a quiet place where like women in weird costumes aren't like handing you flyers for things that you're totally not interested in.
Good. You can actually do some good costume watching from beneath the staircase. Passing by.
That's what everybody likes to see. They like to walk by and see a guy sitting under a staircase, like staring at them.
Looking upwards. Yeah.
My bridge, stay away.
So what do you got coming up next after Troop 142?
Give us some plugs.
I'm working on a new graphic novel for Secret Acres.
Is it secret?
It's not secret. It's just I'm sort of in the midst of it. I'm actually at a good point with it. Like, you know, really sort of. My favorite part about writing books is when you start to have a good sense, like you can see what the structure is and I can sort of feel like I know the characters a little
You're
bit.
Like, this is it. Yeah, I'm doing it.
It's happening. It's going to be real. It's a real thing. Like, you know, when you can sort of envision it as a book, I feel like that's a step towards, you know, being close to being done. Exactly. But it's probably going to take me at least into next year to finish. And then if I'm lucky, it would be out by the end of next year. But
maybe at SPX next year?
Oh, we talked about it, but I mean, I'm about to have another baby. Not me personally.
Oh,
my wife is about to have another.
That's
baby
a problem.
In a month.
Not a problem in most respects, but yeah.
And we'll see. I mean, you know, I already have one child, and I've managed to. I did Troop 142 after she was born. You know, I was able to figure it out. Like, I actually find myself more productive with children because you.
That's what I was thinking actually, because you kind of have to always just kind of be sitting in one place, so. Might as well draw, right? You can't really go out and party or like.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
Do anything else? You just kind of have to stay home, so you might as well draw while you're doing.
Especially with my wife, she's pregnant now. She's falling asleep very early. And we just moved to the suburbs, and I'm having the quietest, most boring summer. But I'm getting a lot of work done. I'm actually getting a ton of work done, so it's kind of good, you know.
So can you give us a little hint of what the next graphic novel is about?
It takes place in 2002, New York City. It centers around some characters who are working at a .com that is a distance learning startup, like trying to put a college education courses online. And
like a University of Phoenix type place?
Exactly, yeah. And some of them are involved in the International Socialist Organization. And some of the characters get involved with a protest that took place against the World Economic Forum in 2002.
Oh, was that the big WTO protest?
This is not the ones in Seattle.
Oh, yeah, that was in Seattle.
But it was a year or two after that, and it was shortly after 9/11, so it was a lot of tension about it.
In
terms of it just being like the first sort of big public protest that took place, you know, in the city in like February of 2002. So it's about that. It's about socialism. And
so involved a lot of research, probably.
It is, actually. So I don't know if that sounds interesting or not, but it's kind of together.
It sounds interesting to me.
Good to me.
I want to read it.
Yeah, right.
Sex stuff in it too.
There you go. Now it sounds really interesting.
Sex and socialism.
I just pre-ordered it in my mind.
Cool. So we're going to talk a little bit later about like the stuff we picked up at SPX this year. Did you grab anything cool? Did you pick up any good mini comics or anything?
Books. From Secret Acres, I got their new one from Theo Ellsworth, Understanding Monster, that just came out. It's their first hardcover, full cover book.
I didn't even see that.
I know. I was so busy. I didn't get to see everything.
This is why we're asking, because we missed so much
stuff. Theo, I mean, he was a special guest of the show. I mean, he did one of the flyers, right?
Yeah, he did our flyer. Yeah. It was great. Yeah, it looked fantastic.
So we'll get it here, hopefully.
I mean, I haven't read it yet.
We'll have it.
So that was one of the ones I brought home. I haven't read it. I picked up Julia Wirtz's new book, The Infinite Weight.
That Koyama put out, right?
Yep, Koyama put out her new book.
Good for her, yeah.
I got, have you heard of a new publisher called Uncivilized Books?
Yeah, sure. That's they put out Gabrielle Bell's new book, right?
So I got Gabrielle Bell's new book, which I've been reading that one quite a bit.
Is that Voyeurs?
Yeah.
Oh, it's great, yeah.
It's so revealing. It's almost uncomfortable to read at times.
She's very honest.
You get all the dish on her relationship with Michelle Gondry.
Yeah, that's the most interesting stuff.
I feel like that is like the big selling point. That and the Comic-Con stuff, which you might not be to yet if you're still in the middle of it. But yeah, the Michelle Gondry stuff is like, I feel like I'm reading like the National Enquirer or something.
Right. You like that?
Yeah, exactly.
So those are some good books I got, yeah.
That's very cool. Yeah, Uncivilized seems like a cool publisher. I was looking at their stuff, and
one of the coolest things I got that we're probably not going to talk about because it's not out. None of you read it. It was from Nobrow was Adventures of a Japanese Businessman.
Oh yeah.
If you get a chance, check that out. It's so incredible. It's one of those wordless, like really thick hardcovers, and it's just about some guy wandering around and crazy things start happening to him, and it's so well drawn and just.
Well, did you see the Nobrow table? They have like just such amazing stuff.
Yeah,
I didn't see their table at SPX, but I've seen them at other shows. They always have like gorgeously designed books.
It's so good, and their printing is great. It's just they do good stuff.
Yeah,
and they complain. I spoke to their publisher, and he says that unfortunately people always point out that the books are really expensive. That's like one thing that he's like, that's something that people notice.
It's well, little $16 20 page, you know, 6x9 books. I can understand, but I love them anyway.
They might start coming down now because they're in previews now. I don't know if that helps, but
no.
I'm not complaining. I wasn't complaining about it, but it is.
It's really expensive, but it's always really, really high quality.
I think it might have been that I was irritating him by pointing out that the books are. And then he's like, yes, people have mentioned this.
Yeah. Well, they're so well printed, they feel like they're just kind of handmade. Yeah. Like, so good.
Speaking of Julia Wirtz's book, I was very excited to finally meet Annie Koyama this year, who I feel like is maybe the nicest person I've ever met in my entire
life.
She's
definitely nice.
It's kind of weird because like Koyama Press is such an institution that, at least for me, I forget it's a person basically. It's like you meet like, I don't know, Scholastic. It's like, Mr. Scholastic's a real person. You know, it's just like you don't think about it, you know?
Dan Scholastic, such a big effect. He works upstairs.
Yeah, Johnny Scholastic.
There you go.
Johnny Scholastic Jr.
Yeah, his dad. John, he started it all.
Julia was pointing out that she was actually speaking of sausage parties, that she was one of the first female cartoonists to get on the roster.
Oh, really? For Koyama?
Yeah, because she was pointing out that she was surrounded by bearded men in plaid.
Oh yeah, it is. It's all Dustin Harbin and Patrick Kyle and John Martz and all those. Yeah, it's all guys.
Dave Ballmer, yeah, bearded.
See, I didn't know that because I don't really see sex.
You don't notice that.
You just judge the work.
Yeah,
quality.
Well, she said she didn't mind. She was it was a lot of lumberjack looking guys, I guess. I
some lumberjack looking women as well.
That's true. New trend in comics for sure.
Well, cool. I mean, I think that kind of covers what our SPX stuff. I have no idea what we want to talk about.
I got two left.
Oh, see, Jared is on the ball. I have no idea.
Jared prepares for this. Yeah, he does. I just kind of wing it.
Well, yeah. It's time to delve into the personal dirt.
Oh, geez.
Oh, God.
So, Mike, you have not given a plug for your fine podcast, if you'd like to do that real quick.
The Ink Panther Show is a weekly podcast that I've been doing with cartoonist Alex Robinson. For about 3.5 years now, although
awesome,
we are winding down.
No, oh, that's my dirt.
Oh, really?
So I hear terrible rumors that you're going to wrap it up in a month.
What we're doing is we're going to episode 150.
Yep.
Where we plan on having a big extra special Tony Consiglio, story.
that guy cracks me up.
The best thing about our podcast is the occasional episodes when Tony's on. He's the funniest. And then we're going to go on a hiatus. It has to do with, the baby, as I mentioned, stuff like that. But I think what we're going to do is, take a break, like a pretty good break. And then I think I would like to relaunch, at some point down the line. All new, all different Ink Panther show.
Extreme Ink Panthers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ultimate Ink Panthers.
The new Ultimate Extreme Ink
Panthers. Yeah. Ultimate.
Ink Panthers now.
So I don't know how well I can plug that. We got 4 more episodes left.
That's a plug because you're building up to the crescendo at the 150th episode.
But every episode is available on my website. So, if you want to go back and hear many, many. We have had a lot of guests from comics. We've had a lot of.
What's that website?
You can just go to inkpanthers.com.
There we go.
Too easy.
Well named.
Yes. So throw us some good advice as, the veteran. Are you one of the very first comic book podcasts? You guys have been doing it for such a long time.
In terms of cartoonists who are doing it.
Yeah, because you guys don't even actually talk about comic books.
Yeah, we don't that much, but we do a bit. But
You've got pro tips.
Yeah,
that's true.
We did pro tips, and I was doing that podcast for the Comics Journal for a little bit.
TCJ Talkies? You sounded like you didn't want to say the name of it.
Oh, no, TCJ Talkies. That's what I did that for a year. But it was just too much to try to get 2 podcasts going. So turns out it's actually a lot of work to interview people.
we're learning that very slowly.
Yeah, we're learning it right now because we're just stumbling through this at the moment.
Very stressful. Nah. But yeah, give us some more advice.
I don't know how you guys are, but I actually get sick in my stomach, nervous before any sort of interview type thing.
Kevin's
lying on the floor right now and he's got a wet washcloth.
I was really right before this started because we've never done Skype before and we've only done a couple interviews. I was standing outside and I was my stomach was hurting.
He started smoking. He's never smoked before in his life.
Well, I was whining about this at SPX because I was moderating a panel and I was sort of anxious the whole day because my panel wasn't until Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
I was talking to people about it's a good thing because if you're nervous, it means you're really going to be putting an effort forth, care about how it comes out.
True.
Yeah. I don't get too nervous for this podcast because it's just us sitting around talking to each other basically. And when people come on, I get a little nervous. This is a little better because I don't have to see you. So I can't see if you're oh, what is he talking about or whatever,
You're rolling my eyes over.
But whenever we've done a live interview, it's always pretty intense when somebody's standing right in front of you. And also when we did the live show,
that was the most intense thing.
Yeah, we actually did a live podcast in front of a crowd and we were
freaking out. Yeah. It was awful.
Did you feel good afterwards though?
I felt really good after. There was it was all positive affirmation. And,
yeah, there was lots of laughing and cheering. I was oh, I'm funny.
And they were it's done. That's the best feeling ever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the fact that it was done.
I think that's what happens because I've done the same thing. I've done live podcasts where I'm right before I'm why on earth did I agree to do this? Why?
Yeah, that's exactly how we were.
I had to do this thing. My stomach hurts. But then afterwards, after it goes over well, you're this is awesome. Let's do this all the time.
Yeah, that's what we were maybe we'll do a live one every week. And then the next week we're no, we're never going to do this again.
Yeah, once it starts and you hear those applause and
you feel like I have to, right now I have to be the best person I've ever been.
Yeah, right.
I have to justify people wanting to listen to me.
Yeah,
true. So, Mike, where'd you do the live one? Like, did you just invite your friends over? What'd you do?
Just invite your friends
just
over.
Over to your house.
We did two live episodes at Bergen Street Comics in Park Slope, Brooklyn. So, like, they had it as like an event, like you like a brunch with the Ink Panthers, and we did an episode, and people come and they can have like a little snacks and champagne. And then we did do one at the Mocha Festival.
Wow.
Not this year, but the year before. That was thinly attended. It went okay, but it was, I will admit, it was thinly attended, and someone in the front row fell asleep. That most certainly will throw you off your game.
We only invited friends.
Yeah, it was all right.
Now, I was told that the person falling asleep may not have been related to the podcast. It may just be a sleepy person.
They were just like, they had found a room and they were just sleeping in there.
It could do a lot to undermine your feeling of being entertaining.
Yeah, your confidence when somebody's like dozing off or like, you know, you're taking like four chairs in the front row.
Hey, guys, live show. So that one wasn't my favorite, but the Burger Street ones were amazing. We had a great time.
I'm sure.
We should try that sometime.
We did try it. Oh, what, you think we should go to Bergen Street to have our Big Planet Comics podcast?
Friendly?
Come to our store.
Yeah, come to our store. Don't shop at this crap hole. Just come down to Big Planet Comics.
No, we got to draw in some of those New Yorkers, you know, like go up there, like, come to our store.
Yeah, just drive down here every Wednesday.
It'll be totally worth it.
But yeah, got any more good advice podcasting-wise? You survive longer than I think we will, so.
My other advice is get to the point where you don't have to edit that much.
Yeah.
We
never edit.
We're there. We don't edit.
Yeah.
Kevin does sometimes.
I do.
He
a
says
bit.
He does, and then it doesn't happen.
At the beginning I was, but yeah, I can't.
I like to tell Jared I'm going to cut out things that he said, and then I just leave them in.
Yeah. That's what you're like, that's probably fine.
Yeah, it was probably funny. It's probably funnier that someone. I told him I was going to cut it out, and then it was still in there.
True.
And that's it. Yeah. So that's my main bit of advice. Don't edit.
Helpful advice.
And be nervous.
Do as little work as possible is good advice. I'll definitely follow that.
Yes.
All right. Final question.
Oh, geez.
There's a rumor going around that you were whooping it up so much at SPX this year that you had to vomit. Is this true?
That is true. I did vomit Sunday night. Oh.
All right. Thanks for being on the show.
But I don't know if it was just me mixing alcohol and Tylenol and 5-hour energy drinks into some sort of concoction in my stomach that didn't sit well.
And SPX.
Because I wasn't really, wasted or anything. So I don't know. It was just 5-hour energy drinks. I think that's what it was. Too much niacin.
Was it five-hour energy drinks?
Yeah. In 5 hours?
That's what did it.
25-hour energy drinks.
Too many of them. that's how I party.
Nice.
Just trying to stay awake. Hey, were you at other people's panels just trying to stay awake?
You heard it, everybody. Mike Dawson, party animal.
Vomity party animal.
Yes. Vomiting.
I think that's it for the first section of our show.
Yeah,
well,
man.
Thank you very much, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Mike. Hopefully it wasn't too stressful for you.
I feel all right. I feel good now. I should do this all the time.
Now that it's over, but we still have a bunch more to do. So we're not nervous anymore because now it'll just be us staring at each other.
Yeah, we're all in our underwear now, anyways.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
But yeah, definitely report back when you've got progress reports and when your new book is out. We'll want to hear from you.
Can't wait to. Yeah. We'll review it. I'm sure.
Yes. Thank you for all the nice things you said about Troop 142.
Sure. It's a great book.
We love it.
We didn't lie.
Everyone go buy it. There you go.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Bye. Hey,
bye. Bye.
Cool. That went all right. Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike.
We learned how to use Skype.
We did.
All right. So, we're going to talk a little bit more about SPX. We got some viewer mail questions about SPX.
Oh, we do.
Yeah, we do. And then we've also got we're going to review a bunch of books
that we got at SPX.
That we did get at SPX. You guys want to do some viewer mail?
Yes.
Let's do it. All right. Our first question comes from Sam, Mr. Marks. He says, I thought it's softball one to you guys this week.
We'll take it.
What was the best comic you picked up at SPX this weekend?
Wow. Getting ahead of the curve.
Is that it?
We haven't reviewed them yet.
That's all right. We're going to review them. It'll be fine. We can let them know. Yeah, well, that's the first one.
Okay, well, I already mentioned it earlier, but my favorite was the No Brow book, Adventures of a Japanese Businessman, which comes out in the spring. Normally, I wouldn't buy it because we'd get it here, but I was like, I don't want to wait till the spring to read this because I flipped through it, and it's incredible.
Yeah, no, I don't even look at the stuff from big publishers that I think we're going to get, but then I realized Prison Pit 4 was there and I didn't buy
it.
Me too.
Oh,
we missed it.
Yeah, it was sold out before I actually got to it. So, whatever.
But anyway,
shows what we know.
Adventures of a Japanese Businessman is great. Check it out if you can. Reminded me a lot of Pinocchio from last year, which was one of my favorite books. It's kind of there's no dialogue or any text really, but just awesome art and crazy adventures.
For me, I'm going to say it was Neon Super Gladiator, which we're going to talk about a little later. That's by my friend Andy, so yep. Maybe it's cheating, but it actually is a really awesome comic.
I kind of got it before SPX, so.
Yeah, but it
was an SPX book, man.
It was an SPX
it
book.
Was.
Yeah, indeed.
Printed for SPX. We just had an inside track.
What about you, Jared?
Actually, an older one, but I'd never seen it. I knew of it. I just picked it up. The Death of Reverend Lovejoy, or Elijah
Lovejoy, yeah.
By, who was it? Noah Van Sciver?
It is. It's not Ethan Van Sciver.
Their brothers was good.
It was Green Lantern by Ethan Van Sciver was the best book.
It was. But yeah, that was really great. And then the Hypo came out the next week, so it was good timing of this guy's great.
Yeah.
Cool. And then he says, what was your biggest surprise hit of SPX this year?
Ooh, that's because it's weird having been to SPX for so many times that there's often a kind of buzz going around the show of like, the book of the show. I remember when Blankets came out, of course, that exploded around the entire comics world. But there tends to be a trend of like, oh my God, you have to go check this out.
I feel the biggest non-surprise was the Chris Ware book.
That's true.
Everybody, it sold out really fast.
Yeah.
Sure.
But no, my point
what
is
was the biggest surprise, though?
But my point is this year, there wasn't kind of a breakout book. It was just there was so much good stuff that it wasn't like one great thing that kind of put everything to shame. Everything was so good.
I feel for me, one of the breakout people was
Lale Westvind. That's what I was going to say
She's one of those people I had no idea about before the show, and after the show, I'm like, I got to read all of this.
Yeah, and she was nominated for Promising New Talent, Ignatz, right?
Yeah,
so
she was. Yep.
Definitely new on the scene for
everybody. Well, actually, we got that book that she was nominated for, but we're going to review one of her other books called Hyperspeed to Nowhere, which was great. Yeah, she's somebody where now I'm like, oh, I'm going to buy every book that she ever makes. And then how bad should everyone that missed SPX this year feel?
Awful.
Yeah, terrible.
You should probably kill yourself.
I just almost started swearing again. I'm getting emotional over here.
That's
but
how much Kevin's going
to
swear at you.
Yeah, yeah. I swear like a sailor when we're not on this podcast, to be honest. But If you're into indie comics and you were able to make it to the show and you didn't go, you messed up.
Bleep, bleep, bleep.
I'll say it again. I think I've been to a few shows around the world, to put that in context, and this is one of the best shows. I'm just saying, with that, this is one of the best comic shows in the world, and even if you don't like independent comics, I think just liking comics, this will open your eyes to a lot of stuff, and I think it's one of the most important things each year for
it's a
just
great
the comic
experience.
Scene. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a great experience.
Yeah, so
a lot.
Like we've been saying recently, if you guys have answers to these questions, send them to us, and we'll talk about them on the show. Because I wonder what Sam's biggest one of the year was. I know he loves metal, so maybe he loved that Merciful Fate comic that came out.
We should talk about that later.
We will talk about that later. Thanks for the question, Sam. We got another question as well. It says, "Hey there, dudes.
Hey,
hey there, bro.
Hey there, dude.
Is it
bro debt?"
Is it a dude or a dudette?
This is a dude. This is Nate Carlos.
What up, dude?
He says, SPX was pretty great, even though I was only able to attend on Sunday, and I will definitely be attending next year.
Nice.
I was able to get a copy of Forming, he said, for only $20, which is cheaper than you can get it here, but too bad if you missed out. A deluxe copy of Time Sexer. That's not really a name. It starts with an F, the second word.
Time Effer.
Yep, with a rad sketch and a button, and a copy of the Crazy Bitchin' Neon Super Gladiator. Which we were just talking about, also with a sketch in it and printed on fantastic stock.
Yes.
Thanks. Yep. I got that book printed up for Andy. What are some of the best things you guys got, if anything? So we kind of just answered that a little bit, and we're going to go through. We're
going to hit some of the best.
So the stuff we're going to be reviewing today is the stuff that we had kind of picked up throughout the show and really loved, and then we went to the different creators and just bought copies for the store. So the stuff we're going to be talking about tonight is definitely the best stuff we got at the show.
So the answer is wait and see.
Yeah, the answer is wait and see.
Hold your horses. It's a coming.
And then he says, P.S. Seriously, though, how good is Neon Super Gladiator? I want you to put in my box anything that Andy makes, and I don't mean that in a sexual way because that would be gross.
I would say Neon Super Gladiator is kind of bitching.
It is definitely bitching. Thanks for the question, Nate Carlos.
Yes, thanks, man.
And if I didn't say it already, thanks to Mike Dawson for being on the beginning of the show, because Mike's awesome. He makes great comics, and he's a great guy, funny guy. And
congratulations on the babies.
Congratulations on all the babies. But always, if you guys have questions, send them to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com. Or leave them on our increasingly desolate podcast hotline at 1-703-539-CAST.
We want to hear from you folks.
We do want to hear from you folks. But I think after the relative success of this evening, we're going to have a lot more people Skyping in.
Yeah.
We can do some things like that. So, but anyway, should we...
Oh, that's something right there. If you want to hear us talk to anybody in particular, let us know.
Let us know on the Facebook, the Twitter, the Tumblr.
What you got?
Whatever you got. All right.
Nobody really famous, please.
No, yeah, nobody real, because we'll get really nervous. Yeah,
can we talk to Chris Ware? That's not going to happen.
Can you guys talk to Jim Lee?
That's never going to happen.
Can you guys talk to Barack Obama?
I bet we could.
How about we don't, and we just do some reviews
instead? Great would it be if we talked to Barack Obama about like Conan comics?
He doesn't remember Conan.
I feel
it
like
was just like the thing he threw out to nerds to get the nerd vote.
Move on. Yep, indeed. All right, so let's review some of these books.
We love comics, they're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell.
I prefer important books like Louis Riel.
It's time for reviews.
All right, so up first we have... Well, we're starting really good here. We've got a book called Curveball.
These are more along the lines of Louis Riel.
Yes, this is almost beyond Louis Riel into the crazier lands.
So this is by Jeremy Cerezzi, who's put out a couple little things before, but you probably have not seen his stuff, unfortunately. He's an amazing artist.
He's got a beard, glasses.
He's got a beard. He wears brooches. He's a great guy. He tunes into our the other podcast that me and Nick do,
which
we should plug on here more often. But
you should.
That is the Magna Beam Live podcast, where we play video game music. Last night we played music for 2 hours.
That was insane.
It was insane. The chat in there was nuts. But anyway, so Jeremy's comic Curveball is incredible. And why doesn't somebody tell the fine folks listening what it's all about?
Because I'm not quite sure. Curveball, this is Curveball Volume 1. Basically, this is set on some sort of cruise liner where there is some of the main character is a waitress / person working on this liner ship. And the main part of the story is just dealing with like super snotty, terrible passengers. But then the kind of overarching theme is that they've lost someone in their life as like, the great relationship is broken and they're like all constantly pining for them. And they're robots.
It seems like everybody is a robot in this, right?
Maybe everybody.
But there definitely are robots.
A lot of robots.
And I should mention it's kind of a sci-fi thing. It seems to take place
maybe some robots.
There's some robots.
Would be the first clue.
And definitely like a lot of like future tech. Like everybody's phone is also their like eyepiece TV and their keys and everything that they use.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. It's like. It's really, really good.
This art is just
That's just the story, which is quite good. But
the story is good. And then
amazing.
The art is, I don't even know what you would compare it to. He's got a very cartoony style.
I would say somewhat like Roger Langridge, in not the detail of it, but that kind of cartoony style he's so good at doing.
It's more like Emily Carroll, maybe? Mm-hmm.
I would say I'd put it more along the lines of somebody like Becky Drystadt,
where he
has a very cartoony, I think very much like Disney-influenced style.
I'd say even more Euro cartoony style.
Yeah.
Euro Disney.
Like
Spirou or something like that.
Yeah, I can see that as well. The only reason I wouldn't say Roger Langridge or... who did you say?
I don't know.
Emily Carroll.
Is that it's very like... It's very brush heavy, like it's got the like very dynamic,
a lot of
weighted
tones
lines
to it for black and white and gray.
A lot of like nice gray tones and stuff, and it's just beautiful. Like it's
insane.
It's insanely good,
and it came in this great wraparound package. And
hand cut it and stuff. Unfortunately, most people aren't going to be able to get their hands on this because he printed 30. He was like, I sold out. I was like, awesome. He's like, I had 30. I was like, oh, come on, Jeremy.
Yeah.
And then he's not reprinting this, but it is going to be
graphic novel.
Yeah, it's going to come out in a graphic novel eventually. So definitely keep your eyes out for that, because Curveball for me was one of the best things I got at
the
show.
It threw
this
me
year.
For a loop.
For a loop?
For
is,
a loop.
Is that what you're going to go with?
It threw me a curveball.
it threw me a curveball, and then I won in a loop. Okay, so so that's Curveball by Jeremy Cerezzi, a great comic. Definitely find his stuff on Tumblr. He's awesome. All right, up next we've got Damn Fine Coffee. This is a Twin Peaks fanzine. You may find that this is kind of a theme throughout the show, is that there were a lot of awesome zines this year, kind of
concept albums almost.
Yeah, like these kind of fan art things that are great. So this has a ton of really good people, and I don't know if I'm going to list everybody.
Yeah, this is put out by Andrea Kalfas, and she assembled a team of what, 20 people?
Such a nice gal too.
She is
so
awesome.
Friendly.
Yeah, so I'll just name a couple of the people I know that are in here. So Sam Bosma, who's great, Kyle Fewell, Andrea Kalfas herself, Jimmy G, who's an awesome guy. Jimmy G's awesome. Callie Ciesimer. I'm sure I'm not saying that right, but she's great too. And it's just great.
All the names are listed on our webpage.
Yeah, they will definitely all be on the webpage.
And I feel I don't know, a lot of those people may be local. I know that
a lot of them are from Baltimore.
Jimmy G and them are all from Baltimore.
There's like a Baltimore Annapolis scene breaking out, which I had no idea about. It's
crazy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of these people are kind of maybe not comics people as much, but illustration people.
Yep.
Kind of internet famous.
Yeah, just incredible artists.
Just awesome people. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, if you're a fan of Twin Peaks, there's just a lot of really cool stuff in here.
Right, let's talk about what's actually in the zine. So I am not a Twin Peaks aficionado because, unfortunately, I tried to start with the movie when I was too young.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I love that movie, but it's definitely right. for people that have watched
it. It was not a starting point. Yeah.
Things were flying over my head. I don't even know if I made it through. But so, as an outsider, I will say that this has a lot of things of the theme might be an old woman with a log.
Yep, that's definitely from Twin Peaks.
She's a popular character.
Yep.
There's some food elements.
There's some pictures of
some hair.
Sherilyn Fenn.
Donuts.
Stylized women.
Some pie.
Some good haircuts.
Some Kyle MacLachlan.
And some damn fine coffee.
And some damn fine coffee. Yeah, so it's mostly just pinups. There are a couple little comics.
Some short comics in here, but generally,
But generally pinups, but the art is so good. It's just...
Yeah, a lot of illustration pinups of characters and stuff.
Yeah, it's a very cool thing.
There's a couple great pinups of the little person in the show. Was he ever named on the show? I can't remember.
I watched Twin
Peaks. The guy like talks backwards and isn't really weird in the
But it's got all the Twin Peaks. It's got Bob, it's got Agent Cooper, it's got everybody.
It's good.
It is good, yeah.
But so as an outsider, like not having any of the references, there's some fine art going on.
Yeah, that's definitely some damn fine art.
I would say damn
fine
cup
of art. Yeah, but if you are a fan, I think you'll get a lot out of this. But it seems like Jared, even who is not a Twin Peaks fan, who should maybe go back and watch Twin Peaks.
Oh yeah, it's almost moving up the list.
It's probably not for you, to be honest, if you're not a Twin Peaks fan, but it does have some amazing art in it.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. So that is Damn Fine Coffee. I see in the F's, there's a book called Fight that came out, but that's not actually listed on here. Should we talk about that?
Nah,
whatever. It's just a zine I put out. It's got Nick in it and Andy and a bunch of other fine people. Like
yeah, we'll
fine
have to
people.
Throw in Nate Carlos box if you didn't already get it.
Like Jeremy Cerezzi's in it and some other people we're going to be reviewing on here. But that came out as
worth
well.
Worth a mention.
Yeah. So up next, we've got a book called Ghost Story by local creator Rob Ullman. Rob Ullman's local, isn't he?
Local enough. I've seen down in the Richmond.
I've seen him at Crafty Bastards before.
Yeah, he makes the rounds.
Yeah, and Ghost Story is just a little...
Is it a ghost story or is it a guest story?
Oh.
I think it's ghost story.
I think it's ghost.
Yeah. This is a mini comic, the miniest. It's a micro comic.
Yeah.
I'd say it's probably, 3 inches by 3 inches. It's a tiny little thing, but... And it's short, but it's a fun story. I don't even know it. Like,
it's hard to talk about this. It's kind of like
without spoiling it. But
yeah, it is very short, and the kind of the best thing about it is the end, which is really funny.
It's about a ghost who falls in love.
Yeah. And then and that's pretty much it. And about a ghost that falls in love with a human. Yeah.
But one of Rob's greatest strengths is his gorgeous women. He draws very pinup style stuff, and so of course he falls in love. The ghost falls in love with a cute pinup type girl, and it's cute.
Yeah, it's
great art.
It's definitely cute. Yeah. So the thing you may find when we're talking about these books today is that a lot of these things are very short, so there's not going to be maybe as much to say about them as we would about, say, like a 700-page Tezuka graphic novel or something like that. But
these are, like we said, our picks of SPX, of at least the stuff we saw. We missed a lot of stuff, but
all
recommended.
But Ghost Story, very cool. And up next, we've got Guerrilla Year Number 1.
Too boy.
Did we talk about the Gremlin movie incident?
We did.
We did last year. That was one of our finds from SPX last year.
Yeah, that was a long, long time ago.
A year ago?
But this is by Carabine, who I believe is also local.
I thought she was up north with the crazy...
From up north, Carabine. But
Massachusetts.
But we loved her comic, the Gremlin movie incident, which was about seeing gremlins as a child. And
autobiography of the horror of gremlins.
And her new comic, Guerrilla Year... I'm just going to throw it out there. This is a weird comic.
This is weird. In the back, she says it's like she's trying to put a bunch of these out. Just kind of the basic theme is gorillas.
Or
apes.
It's kind of like she even says it's kind of like a stream of consciousness story that just has lots of pictures of gorillas in it because she spent a lot of time at the local zoo drawing gorillas.
Which is not a bad thing for an artist to do.
And actually, I think the part in this comic where she describes... Yeah, going to the zoo and drawing gorillas and that stuff is actually, to me, more engaging than the first part of the comic, which is still fun and has some great art in it. But I feel like she's very good at autobiographical stuff.
Yeah.
She's very good at just sort of getting to the point and telling her story in an interesting way. And I think that the back half of that does this. The back half of this does that. And the first half is like, it's really weird.
Yeah, it's about just her surreal. Going to the movie theater and
thinking
bunch
about
of weird
art
things happen.
And turning into a gorilla. All kinds of good
turning
stuff.
Turning into a gorilla.
There's a lot of symbolism. Yeah.
Bunch of dogs appearing. Yeah, there's definitely some subtle symbolism and then some very straightforward symbolism as well. Like there's just like a car that says you should have finished art school on the window.
Yeah, right. Yep.
But no, it's a cool comic. And her art's great. It's really golden agey, especially her gorilla drawing. Yeah. But maybe I just think of gorillas as being like sort of these golden age, silver age.
Yeah, it's like all about gorillas, yeah.
Which she talks about in the back too, which is pretty cool. Yeah, no, it's a fun little comic though. And
yeah, she had a thing at SPX. It was all of her gorilla sketches, just as a mini comic.
I should have got that. I love gorillas.
Yep.
All right, next. We got so many books.
Yeah, we do. Well, I don't know. We're going through these pretty fast, actually. So up next, we have a book that we mentioned a little earlier. This is Hyperspeed to Nowhere by Lolly Westvind. Yeah. So Jared was saying maybe this isn't his type of thing.
The bananas.
Yeah, but this is definitely right up my alley.
This is like if Nick's
twice up my alley.
It spilled onto a comics page and was amazing.
So this is a very it's a few different short stories, all very science fiction-ish.
Well, definitely science
fiction. Yeah, well, I said very.
Very-ish.
Yeah. And they kind of run the gamut from a story about an escaped bounty that is then collected and then they go out to eat.
Yeah, there's a space captain who falls in love with the crazy squid creature
that goes into a black hole. And
there's a man who gets planted into the ground. His head turns into a rock.
Yeah, and then so all the stories have almost like a Mobius feel to them, not art wise, but maybe in like their subject matter.
The later story kind of does have an art style of Mobius.
Yeah, style of it.
But the art in this is just it's crazy, and it just has like such a personality of its own that reminds me of a lot of things, but is then so like idiosyncratic at the same time.
It's weird too because there's actually varying. Styles a little bit.
She switches it up.
The first
a lot.
One's a little more jagged and like crazy and all over the place, and then the one at the end is really like more clean,
rounded.
And yeah, just, like maybe more technical a little bit.
And very detailed and just I loved it. I don't know.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I could see you drawing comparisons between something like this and maybe like Prison Pit, definitely to a certain extent.
And the earlier ones,
and then also reminds me of.
Like Ben Mara's stuff.
And then a little bit of Neon Super Gladiator, which we'll talk about as well. But it's a great book.
Awesome.
Really well colored as well. She works with color really well. Kind of somehow having like a muted palette, but also just an insanely colorful palette as well. Yeah. So it's a great book. Definitely worth checking out. It's called Hyperspeed to Nowhere. It is good stuff.
She's got a bunch of other ones out. So
yeah, I think you'll find that universal praise is going to be a theme of these reviews.
No, well, like we said, these are our picks of the show.
These are all things we liked.
All right. So up next, we've got E&J Super Comics by E&J. This is a collection of, were these all mini comics before they were put into this book?
Yeah, I sure hope so.
Yeah, they were all mini comics that he put out throughout the years. And they're awesome. These are more straightforward than a lot of some of the stuff you'll find at SPX, you know, because at SPX, it's usually a little more obtuse.
Well,
this is like,
especially when Jared lets me go around and pick the comics we buy for the store.
It does help.
They're all the weirdest.
But this is pretty straight up. The first three things in there are the Laser Wolf trilogy, which he describes in the beginning. Is just he had an idea, and it was an inside joke with his friends about a detective who had a partner who was a wolf that shot laser beams out of his eyes.
Sold.
And it's actually pretty straight up like what that would be as a action TV series. Like they go
a lot of cybernetically modified animals. And
yeah, the first one they fought like a mad scientist and some
FBI
animals.
FBI investigations.
And, yeah, it's good
it's
stuff.
Like if Mulder and Scully, one of them, had been wolf with lasers.
But my favorite thing in here was there's a couple of stories of the. Chimbley sweep?
Oh yeah,
it's like about a chimney sweep, and when reading it, the accent is just great. Whenever the chimney sweep talks, he sounds exactly like a chimney
like a
sweep.
Cockney.
Like let me show
like
you
the
an
most
example
stereotypical
here.
Like Cockney accent ever, which is hilarious because Ian is American.
Well, it's like it's almost like the American interpretation.
Yeah,
of
that's
what
why
it,
it's even funnier because you know, just over the top, ridiculous.
He's like, "That's it, sold this. I've had me feel crazy for one day." It's like stuff like that. I don't know.
Well, when you say it like that,
where the bloody hell do you come from?
Apologies, wow, wow, dude, your British accent
it's
is
falling
rough.
Apart.
I like he's picking the most dynamically boring lines and things. It's like,
Christ.
He's like, you're like, hello, my name is Joe.
Hello.
Bang, bang.
All right, that's enough.
By the way, so this is a collection of a ton of his minis all put together, which is kind of cool because you get to see from like Laser Wolf, which is one of his earliest, to like the evolution of how his style's changing and stuff.
Yeah, Laser Wolf is a little rough. It's a little sketchy. The art's not great. It's good. But then as you go along, it gets better and better. And the last thing, the Rat and Kim thing, is incredible. And it's got a little bit of a color at all the right places, and it's good.
And his art's very energetic. It reminds me a lot, like, of Doug Tennaple, I feel like.
Yeah.
I can... Oh, I was going to say I can see that, even though I'm the one that just said
I
that.
Can see that. There you go. Right here for you.
But he has this funny way of drawing eyes, too, and making them very expressive, like, yeah, to the point where they'll just crack you up when you're reading a panel, just because the people look so manic and insane.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And, it's a lot of fun. And it's a big book, definitely bigger than a lot of the stuff you're going to get.
Yeah, like I said, this is a big stack of minis in a big trade.
And especially he put this out himself, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not through a publisher, and it looks like it could be, like, an image trade or something. It's a nice looking book.
It's well put together.
It is well put together. All right, so up next we've got Immovable Objects. This is by James Hindell. This seems like a semi-autobiographical sad guy comic.
A little bit.
It's hard to tell. Hopefully it's he's like, man, I'm gonna write about a sad guy. I have no idea. So this is really stretching as an artist.
Yeah, hopefully this didn't all actually happen to him, but I bet some of it.
Yeah, right. But this was from 1% Press, which is another new publisher that kind of broke out recently that I'd never heard of before, and they're doing a whole bunch of stuff. But yeah, this one's just guy. I would say this is very much like almost 90s in the style of, like you said, just very autobiographical seeming, like slice of life, dramatic stories of
definitely
people trying to deal with stuff and relationships.
Reminded me a lot of like early issues of Optic Nerve.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That's
very Adrian Tomine.
Yeah, but it's really good. I like his art a lot. It's also kind of that like Klaus Tomine slash combo style. And then just like, it was good.
It even has like the two-tone coloring of the old Tomine. Well, even new Tomine and Klaus stuff as well. But yeah, no, I mean, he's a good draftsman. I felt a little bit like it's kind of like a thing that I had read before. But also, it's still very, it's very affecting at some points. And you kind of feel really bad for the guy in the comic because he just kind of gets, step walked all over.
Yeah.
But
it's very sad.
It's that kind of comic.
Yeah.
It's a little depressing. It's about his relationship with this girl that he really liked and going to art school.
Yeah.
Not art school, but like going to art classes with her. And it goes into some interesting territory about his missing dad that he'd never known. And it's cool.
Yeah. It's good stuff. All right. Up next, we have Neon Super Gladiator.
Oh, snap.
I'm going to put kind of crazy effect on my voice later. probably not. But this is by Andy Kettler, who I believe has been on this show before.
You mean Andy Kessler, the Mobius guy?
We won't go into that. But
Kettler.
Yeah, this is by Andrew Kettler, or Andy K, which his webpage is Andy K Art. And a couple people were like, oh, have you read that book by Andy Cart? It's really good.
I was like, no, Andy.
But so Neon Super Gladiator is a story. I know this book pretty well. No, it's basically about people playing like a fighting video game, which is something that Andy does a lot of and I do a lot of
in the future in a city called Urbania.
Yeah, in the city called Urbania, which is the setting for a lot of Andy's comics, past and future. But
it's very much Last Starfighter territory going on here, where there's a motherboard is a giant cybernetic, perhaps, organism who's very interested in the skill levels of people playing these video games.
Yeah,
who I would say is almost like Mother Brain from Metroid.
Yep.
And people play this arcade game called Neon Super Gladiator, but it ends up it's kind of a test for people to find warriors to fight.
Like Last Starfighter.
Yeah, exactly. But
and Apollo's the main kid who's kind of, there's hints, like people are accusing him of being like chipped up as some sort of super cyborg, so he has a advantage over the other players, but not quite sure what his backstory is.
Yeah, and so he is very good at this game, and sort of the match is rendered we'll talk about the art in a second, but basically you go through the match and then Apollo catches the attention of some of the higher ups, and that's kind of where the first issue ends. And it's it's very cool. The story is very cool, but the art is
what this
is all about.
So we've known Andy a while. So one of the exciting thing for us is to always see his art constantly evolving, and you know, seeing new influences like merged into his stuff. So this is, we say, Darrow by way of Mobius, by way of
I would, if I was going to start with a bass, I would start with Taiyo Matsumoto.
Okay,
yeah,
and then I would, probably add on some James Stokoe.
Yeah. Yes.
Some Jeff Darrow.
Yeah.
Even some...
And a pinch of...
Nate Simpson and Mobius.
I could see that. Yeah, Mobius.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, what we're saying is it's really detailed.
Yeah.
The thing that screams to me about this art, though, is, like, it's so detailed that, like, it's printed in black and white. And I just, like, I honestly, every time I read it, I want to pick up a crayon and start coloring in, like, the things. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, he's talking about maybe once it's all collected, putting it in color or something like that.
Yeah. He's a great colorist.
But also the black and white is great just because I feel like you can see everything.
Yeah.
Like, really, I don't know.
Yeah, Darrow
can kind of overwhelm with the detail, and yet this is solid enough.
Yeah, almost, because
details are picked out enough that it's not
printed at a large size. It almost reminds me of the Big Guy and Rusty the Boy Robot king size black and white edition that came out, which almost can be a little too detailed at times, but is also just like something to behold. And I feel like this comic is that as well.
Yep.
Definitely something to pick up and just stare at for a long time.
It's a fast read, but if you want to stare at some comic pages for a while, you know, you'd be hard pressed to find better ones.
Keep your eyes out for this Andy K kid.
Indeed, yeah, he'll be around. All right, so after that we've got New Sludge City by Brendan Leach. This is a retrofit book. We've definitely talked about quite a few retrofit books on here before, from Bowman to Raw Power to 1999. But
this is another one that knocks it out of the park.
Yeah, like so many of the retrofit books, which is Box Brown's kind of mini comics publishing company. This is just a really, really awesome comic.
So this one is basically, the opening page is New York City 2092. And so basically in the future, the two main guys are like, you know, kind of street punks who are up to no good as usual. But the technology that the story deals with is that you can basically sell your body for a night and basically swap brains with people. So rich people are like renting these punk kids to, you know, use their bodies to go out and party all night or whatever it is. And like all good technological sci-fi stories, something goes terribly wrong, and one of them does not transfer correctly. I'll leave out. I don't know. Should we say more about it?
I don't know if we should say too much more about it.
So that's about the middle part of it.
Except that it's got a really cool art style. It's all drawn in pencil, which is interesting. Yeah. But doesn't look unfinished like a lot of things that you see with pencils of. It doesn't look like something that's drawn in pencil that's meant to be inked. It's just like looks really good in pencil. Yeah.
Well, I think the thing about it is that the coloring on it, because they shade it with the shading of pencil, so you get a lot of grays, but then they also white out the speech bubbles, so it really pops it out. So it looks like everything was done in a black and white and gray, you know, wash on it almost.
Yeah, and what I did like about this was it felt like a complete story, but like it had a lot of ideas in it, but it was also just, it was very compact and succinctly told. Like there's no extra crap in here that doesn't need to be here. It's just a really well told quick story. It almost seems like it was something that would be like a section of like the heavy metal movie or something like that. And it's got a very cool kind of, it's that kind of 80s version of the future, I feel like.
Yeah.
But where everybody has mohawks and stuff.
Yeah.
But
decaying societies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but it's super awesome.
It's really cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. So that's New Sludge City by Brendan Leach.
Yep.
All right, we just got a few more. So
just a few.
It is a lot, but all right. So up next is Ramble On Number 2 by Calvin Wong. We all loved Ramble On Number 1, and Ramble On Number 2 is also awesome. Calvin Wong, I don't know that a lot of people would know his stuff, but he...
You should.
He works on The Regular Show, which probably a lot of people have seen, he does an awesome comic called Ramble On.
Ramble On. I don't know if you know much about how much anybody out there knows about it. This is in kind of a weird post-apocalyptic world, but it's... Pretty much just fantasy style stuff. RPG in comic form.
Yep.
And the main character in this issue is on a kind of a fetch quest where he needs to get certain items to impress this girl. And so, you know, he ends up like fighting ghosts and a ghost warthog and a cyclops and stuff just to get certain items from them. And it's very creative in the ways that he gets each item.
Defeats them. And all the monsters are so weird and
the device that all of the items are used for at the end is ingenious and just great. It's kind of heartwarming and awesome at the same time, like really fun action stuff and I don't know. It's great.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Dungeon Quest.
Yeah.
A little bit.
But then it's definitely more, it's like more, almost like Dungeon Quest by way of Pixar or something like that.
Yeah, it's a little more heartwarming.
Like, you can definitely see an animator's hand in it. And then also, it's definitely more sort of earnest and heartwarming than something like Dungeon Quest, which can be a little, like, too ironic or something. This definitely all seems born out of, like, love of, like, role-playing games and things like that. Yeah, and it's just awesome. Calvin's, he has a really expressive way of storytelling. Like, it's simple, but he delivers action really well, and
he's got really good design sense. Like Nick was saying, all the monsters are really creative and stuff. and then he uses a lot of like sound effects and stuff, which you kind of forget people don't do much of, and like motion in the comics is really shown really well. So, you know, there's a lot of fight scenes and like crazy stunts trying to avoid monsters and stuff. It works.
Yeah, he's
really well.
It's got like a Lewis Trondheim feel to,
yes,
to me.
Yes, thank you.
Where it's like, it seems effortless, but it's done so well. And it's,
right.
it's,
you're like, this is simple. And you're like, no, that's very clever.
Yeah, it's
done.
Like, it's like, yeah, it's like simple, but like nobody would ever be able to do it because it's just great. Yeah, so that's Ramble On. It's a good comic. All right. Rav number 2 and 3 by Mickey Z is next. And this is, Rav 6 actually premiered at the show, but by the time we went to go pick stuff up, she only had Rav 2 and 3 left, which is, I don't know if these were initially released together or if they were compiled together, but how do you even describe Rav?
It's about this guy whose girlfriend...
is his name Soup?
No, his name is Juice.
Juice.
And he's kind of liquid. Kind of like a greaser type guy.
Yep.
And he takes his girlfriend to this graveyard.
Yep.
And they get attacked by some cultists. And then she goes to IHOP. And he's trying to get back to her.
All right. I will just throw in that I like the story. This art was not for me.
Oh, really? See, I could definitely see that. I'm a big fan of this art.
That's why I'm bowing out of the art.
Yeah. I definitely like it's. She has a very... enthusiastic style.
The art is great. It's a little muddy in this, just because it feels like it was all kind of drawn in like a ballpoint pencil and or ballpoint pen, and kind of as she went along she's like, oh, I wrote that wrong, and kind of scribbled stuff out and like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
stuff overlaps and like, but I don't know, it works.
But I feel that gives it this sort of like essence,
manic
of
energy.
Like, yeah, it's got this energy, like it feels very like DIY punk rock, like just like like, I just want to get these ideas out on
the page as fast as I can, because there's so many of them. Yeah.
And then and something about that really appeals to me. And it's really funny.
Yeah.
It's like really just weird, funny stuff going on all the time. It's like, you know, I don't know. There's a part where a character yells, if you liked it, then you should have put a ring on it. And then there's also like there's a letters page in it that's hilarious. Rants and Ravs. And I don't know. It's just for me, it was just like a really fun, well put together comic. I could see the art style not being for everybody, like similar to maybe something like Josh Bayer's Raw Power.
Yeah.
Which is like also just insanely,
it's kind of like overwhelming the page.
But at the same time, I love that book too. So, So definitely check this out. It's I was saying it's sort of like Scott Pilgrim by way of Gary Panter.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
But yeah, that is Rav number 2 and 3. All right. Up next, we've got Roll for Initiative by the aforementioned Jimmy G, or Jimmy Gigerich, who also did something in our fight zine. He's an awesome guy.
Yeah.
But Roll for Initiative is a kind of Jimmy G's love letter to Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, yes.
So I will leave Jared to this.
All right. So this one is basically going back to the oldest of old school D&D from like the 80s. And it's just like, if you didn't play D&D, you're going to miss out on some of this. But just like kind of referencing a lot of the monsters and, you know, classic things of old fantasy fight stuff. And it's just a series of like 1 and 2 page spreads of like, it's like the scenes that you would find in like an old adventure of like, you know, Tomb of Elemental Evil. And there's some crazy drawing by some kid when he's 19.
I knew you would love this.
I loved it so much. Yeah. So so that's it. You know, it's not an actual comic. It's just full of awesome pictures of fights and monsters and attacks.
It's just incredible.
Is it not a comic? Because I felt like I was trying to figure out the story of it, and it like was not.
Well, were some characters who show up later.
No, it's not a story.
Okay.
But he does draw the same orc a couple of times, so it might be.
Yeah, but Jim. So for me, I like the old D&D stuff, and I think it's cool. But I don't have that kind of institutional knowledge that Jared does from DMing, you know, hundreds of games. But
so good.
Matter though.
It doesn't matter.
No, that's the thing too. Yeah,
I love his art so much. It's very grotesque. Yeah. Like he's definitely a guy that likes to draw a vein.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sweat and blood and stuff like that. Almost like a Johnny Ryan, but even just more disgusting and yeah. Well, maybe not more disgusting, but just like
just great.
Like Johnny Ryan by way of like Ren and Stimpy close ups.
Yeah.
If you guys know what I'm talking about when I say that.
Yeah.
But it's just like if there's a nose, there's probably a booger coming out of it, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's but really
At the same time, this reads like it could be some adventure, and it's like, and then in the next scene, the crab man attacked.
You're yeah.
Like, cool.
Yeah. But yeah, it's very cool and definitely awesome, worth taking a look at.
Yep.
All right, so next up, speaking of bloody things, we've got Satan is Alive, a tribute to Merciful Fate.
Yes.
So, yeah, exactly. So Merciful Fate is one of the early black metal bands, like satanic metal bands. Their lead singer was King Diamond. And
King Diamond.
That guy's got one hell of a voice. But so this is just kind of another fan comic, like similar to maybe Damn Fine Cup of Coffee. But definitely... It's a thicker book, and it has more comics in it.
There's a lot of comics.
And the thing I found interesting about this is, like, one, I didn't really know anything about Merciful Fate. I'd never heard them before.
Until today when we played Merciful Fate in the store for an hour.
Well, yes, while reading this.
Until an old lady came in.
But, like, because Merciful Fate's lyrics are so evocative, and they're all dealing with, like, these, you know, Nordic gods and
or
witches
Cthulhu,
and Cthulhu and stuff. That just a lot of the things in here are pinups, but there's a lot of comics, and a lot of the comics are just taking as their subject just a song where they just write the lyrics out and then try to illustrate it.
Yeah.
And there's just so much to work with in their lyrics that just some of the things in here are amazing. And like they're like you said, they're all kind of around the same sort
these
of themes
illustrated
and stuff.
Lyrics, basically,
but
for the most part.
Amazing. Yeah,
they're
such
incredible.
Good stories.
Well, yeah, because there are some great people in here. Like,
I'm just saying, like, as subject matter, it's so much fun stuff.
Yeah. Oh, sure, yeah.
Done so well.
Yeah, and done
people.
And done by people that just feel like the right people to
yeah.
be.
Yeah, there's
it.
Like Benjamin Mara's in this.
And like Chuck Beebe, who did Black Metal, has a thing in here. There's even a pinup by Roger Langridge in here, which I thought
amazing.
Was amazing.
There's a great Johnny Ryan pinup.
Yeah, and just a ton of other people, too, like Tom Neely, JT Dockery. Just like
these Lolo. Just
yeah, there's a Facilis Lolos thing, which is crazy and awesome, but
nonstop awesome.
Yeah, it's very very cool stuff. I mean, if you're a fan of Merciful Fate, it's crazy that you don't have this.
This must be inscribed.
One of the coolest thing in here. There's a lot of quotes up from various people about Merciful Fate, which is very. Like, I thought that was the most interesting part of it.
Yeah, they found, like, some real, like, old school people from the scene who were, like, talking about the first time they heard Merciful Fate and, like, what an influence it was on them.
And yeah, and there's even, like, an article
really
or two.
Yeah.
It's like, a very well laid out, like, it's
balanced.
It's the best book about Merciful Fate I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's
seen.
A book, really. It just happens to have tons of art in it.
And yeah, and it's great. It's like, just a nice package. It's very awesome.
So buy this book. Play a couple of Merciful Fate albums and read along with it. And
I definitely want to actually sync up and like listen to the song that the comics are about and go along with them like that. Because I was listening to Merciful Fate while I was reading this, and the song Satan, Satan, Satan or whatever I was listening to was not the one that I was reading at the time. So, but a very cool book.
And some of the things in it are very creative, too. They're not just strict interpretations.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
But then some of them are, too.
Yeah,
and that's awesome. Too. All right. So just a couple more things. Up next, we've got, I think, probably one of the best comics of the show. This is SF number 2. By Ryan Cecil Smith.
Anybody here read SF number 1?
Anybody?
Nope.
No. Oh, are you talking to us?
Yeah.
I thought you were talking to our fans.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
What's up, fans?
Hey, guys.
No, SF number 1 did exist, and I did not get to read it. But there's, thankfully, a very good
summary.
Previously in SF thing in the front of this book.
All right. So this is about Space Fleet, and then within Space Fleet, the Scientific Foundation. Within Scientific Foundation, the Special Forces. So Space Fleet, Scientific Foundation, Special Forces, or SF, is an elite team of extraordinary scientist fighters devoted to exploring the universe and protecting the Earth. So that's the intro page on the inside. This is, oh man, it reads like every awesome 70s, 80s Japanese cartoon that's like mistranslated that just blows your mind when you're 8 years old and you have no idea what's going on, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it's got like sort of a Captain Harlock feel to it, but then it definitely seems influenced by, of course, like old heavy metal magazine stuff too. And God, it's so good.
There's a bunch of aliens saving a giant bird who is a general.
Yeah,
sure.
And there's like, you know, just like the kind of the stuff you would expect in a comic like this, like chases and fights and, like, you know,
spaceships and
gambling
and
spaceships
slime
and aliens.
Creatures.
But there's something about the art and the way that it's delivered that's, like, I don't know, very, like, deadpan and just
yeah, for as like goofy and weird as a lot of the characters' designs are and stuff, it's just a really straight ahead.
But also kind of down to earth, actually, because like the character, what's the main guy's name? Oh God,
what Hoopa?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
He's like just kind of a young.
It was Hoopa Doopa.
Yeah, Hoopa Doopa. He's like a kind, gentle, like last of his kind type alien, and he's just kind of along for the ride. He's the new recruit. And he's the only one in this who's like, this is crazy. Why is this happening? Like, can we all just, like, get along? Let's just have fun. And it's pretty cool. It's interesting seeing it from his point of view and all these wacky adventures going on. And he's always just kind of, like, really nice to everybody. And he's like, oh, these aliens are all dying. Why don't we save one of them?
Well, and then it's also very much like he's out on this crazy adventure. But then when he goes home, he just, like, lives in an apartment with like a couple of roommates, and it turns into this almost like domestic comedy thing. This is definitely the one thing I got there this year where I was like, I want to know the rest of the story. I'm like, yeah, what's
the story is interesting, and it has a little bit of that video game influence because he can like collect items along the way, and then there's like diagrams of like, oh, he just got the slime tube and the Samurai Zero weapon.
Just another thing of Jared letting me pick a lot of the comics we bought this year is there's a lot of amazing, awesome video game stuff in them. But you know, it's like I like that though. It's like a context that people are familiar with that you can use in your stories, and it works because it's you know, it's video game stuff, but then it's also that sort of classic, like, Joseph Campbell type stuff, too.
Yeah.
And I don't know. This comic's awesome.
It's wonderful.
And the art's, the art actually reminds me a lot of Dungeon Quest, which I know we talked about before.
Kind of mixed with James Kuljalka and weird other elements. Like,
but then really detailed sometimes as well. Yeah. And there's a lot going on, but it's also always really easy to read. And it's just a really good comic.
Yep. Yes.
So that is SF number 2.
There's talking cats in it.
There are talking cats. We've got Speed Hog the Hedgehog, speaking of video game comics.
Yes, this might have been one of the best things I've ever read.
This is great. So this is a Sonic the Hedgehog jam comic, or, well, the beginning of it's
this
a jam comic.
The nucleus of the origin of this.
Yeah, it started as a Sonic jam comic.
By amazing people, Becky Drysdad and Tyler J. Hutchinson, a lot of people who kind of have ties to animation and stuff and video games.
And they all kind of were super big Sonic fans, so they all made their own comics and just kind of threw them all in a book.
Yeah, and then that's kind of the beginning of this, and then some other people came in and drew comics as well. Yeah. And they got a bunch of good people. So it's Tyler Hutchinson, Becky Drysdad, Ian Jones, Corte. I mean, there's a bunch of people. Jeremy Cerezzi's in here, too. Yeah, he's got a great pinup, actually. There's just a bunch of really, really good people in here. They're drawn really funny Sonic comics.
But yeah, there's a lot of breakaways from this. It's not just like, here's a new Sonic adventure. There's a lot of commentary and jokes about Sonic and like ridiculous settings and like, what if Sonic did this, or what if Sonic was this person? Or
what if Sonic just yelled chili dog
and... Yeah.
What if he ate Chaos Emeralds and grew giant legs?
Yeah. That's one of the weirdest comics in here, and one of my favorite comics in here.
Or the one where just like all his rings are getting knocked out all the time is like going insane.
Oh, and how a lot of the rings are like sentient, and Sonic's just kind of like kidnapping.
Yeah,
but the best is the Jam comic. God.
Yeah. Well, there's so many good people that worked on it.
I like the other ones too.
I like the is it Ashley Davis who does the No Mario's Tumblr? But her comic in there is really great. The whole thing is just a lot of fun.
The Jam comic just takes such weird turns, and you can tell like it's a jam comic, you know, because of the like people were like kind of making it normal, and then it gets like really weird.
Yeah, Nick and I and a couple of our friends love to just draw jam comics, and like so seeing some of them actually published and being like, oh wow, you can actually like put these things in a book and it's okay,
and they can be really good. Like this one's great.
Yeah, the one in here is great. It's actually sick. So Tyler J. Hutchinson, the guy who put this out, is he's a big proprietor of Jam Comics, and he actually just started a webpage called We Draw Comics.
Oh yeah,
and it's kind of like Draw Something, except what you're doing is you're drawing the next panel
That's
of a Jam comic.
Awesome,
and it's really cool. It's sort of just getting off the ground. I think it's still in beta, but anybody who's
artiste,
an aspiring comic artist, it's definitely worth checking out. And,
yeah, hit him
and
up to get into the beta.
Yeah, I've drawn a few things on there, and it's definitely been fun.
That's awesome.
It's cool stuff. Yeah. So, all right, we just got one more thing. And then we're going to be done. This is a tiny little book that is not even a comic.
Nope.
It's just awesome. It's called Treasure Chest. It's by Sam Bosma, who is an incredible artist.
So good.
I mean, his stuff in here is good, and then like some of the stuff you see, if you look online and look at, like, there's a skateboard deck that he designed that's like one of the greatest illustrations I've ever seen in my
entire. this is all just basically kind of RPG based items that you can collect in kind of a his idea of an RPG. Like, he just made up all these items that you could collect. One of the interesting things about this is he had a bunch of these there, and each one has different items in it.
Yeah, I think so. This
is like random panels.
This is 24 pages, and there were 74 items altogether that you could get, or 72 or something like that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So depending on which one you pick up, you have different different items. I think my favorite one, in at least the copy I'm holding here, is the +3 ham hock, which is just, you know, it's just it's all like that, like standard goblin shield, and it's got like a bear trap on the front of it, or I don't know. It's very inventive. Yeah, and some of them are really funny, and then some of them are just like, you know, like beautifully rendered, like necklace of gilded leaves, and it's just like incredible.
Much like Roll for Initiative, this is like strictly for RPG fans.
Yeah,
except that it's amazing art.
Yeah, it is amazing art. Yeah, and it's definitely worth taking a look at. And
it says Volume 1, so hopefully there'll be more loot in the future.
Yeah, I'll definitely be buying loot. I got to equip my character with everything in here. But that's it. Of course, there were like hundreds and hundreds of
so much good
there.
Stuff.
There's so many things we missed,
or things we kind of took a look at but maybe didn't buy because we'll be getting them at the store. Like I got to see the Pippi Longstocking book that Drawn and Quarterly is putting out, which just looks beautiful. Prison Pit number 4, of course, is I got to look through somebody's copy of it, but didn't actually get the copy for myself.
The new Chris Ware, all the new No Brow books.
Yeah, everything in No Brow's table.
It's going to be a good year.
So all the stuff Annie Koyama had, which I can't say enough about her, and like what a great publisher she is and how much good stuff they're putting out. I'm really excited for the new, when we get to our hands on the new Julia Wirtz book and get to review that. And a lot of local people who do great stuff. Lamar Abrams had the new remake, which isn't out yet, but we'll be reviewing that when it comes out. And I don't know, it was a good show this year.
It was great.
Yeah.
The best.
Tons of great panels. I mean, we didn't even mention the fact that, you know, Dan Clowes, Adrian Tomine, Chris Ware, and the Hernandez brothers were all at the
and
show.
And Charles Burns.
And he was walking around.
Just chilling out.
He wasn't even.
Yeah, Charles Burns comes to the show to hang out.
Yep.
That's how awesome the show
is. Just to hang out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those guys, Clowes and Ware and all those guys have, you know, they have like a gravity to them that sucks all the cartoonists in. But it was a good show. I was excited to be there and as like just an attendee, but I was really proud to like be involved with it and like help put it on.
It was definitely one of the best shows of all time. Just incredible.
Yeah, I definitely went through some SPX withdrawal like the few days after because I felt like I made like a lot of new friends at the show and stuff. And
hey, it's time to start for the next one.
Yeah, and then thankfully not until I have to process all those exhibitor forms on January 1st. But
there you go.
Yeah, we'll see.
So importantly for all the SPX kids out there, people who have not been to the show, the tables do sell out quickly. So as he just said, new year, get them in quick.
Yeah, and also for people that didn't get to make it, I mean, I know this is the Big Planet Comics podcast, but I'm turning it into a
professional viewpoint.
Yeah, we're starting to put all the panels up. So like, if you want to see, like, we just put up a Dan Clowes panel.
Because you videotaped all of them.
Yeah, and I think most of them are going to go. There are a few that won't make it up, but most of them are going to be up there. So you can take a look at those starting this week. They're going to be up there. And
sweet.
We had a couple guys interviewing cartoonists, so there's a bunch of interviews with cartoonists going up as well. Rusty and Joe, who are friends of the show. Awesome guys.
Do their own mini comics as well.
Do their own mini comics. Full sanction. Yeah, so SPX 2012, it was good stuff.
It was great.
Yeah, so we'll have all the links up on our webpage too, in case you want to check it out.
Yeah, holy moly, this was an hour and a half podcast.
We love SPX.
We do love SPX. And I think that's it. So we're gonna end this SPX podcast.
Bend a fond adieu.
And then we're just gonna turn it right around and record our regular podcast for this week.
Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, see you guys later. Bye.